Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot believe how dumb it's getting out there. I'm not knocking the people who care, the people who do homework, the people who learn, the people who read, the people who still think. You younger people really are the only remnant of America that we can look to for any kind of leadership or hope in the future. The geopolitical system is garbage. We know that now. It's been taken over, overthrown, reworked. It's communized, Zionized, and every other thing you can imagine. We don't have much of a chance unless we do something about it. And getting Americans to do something about it when so many of you are sick, vaxxed, unwell, out of work, with all kinds of personal crises, it's not a joke. These times were orchestrated. They were created. They were fabricated to throw at us. And too much of it is sticking. And I understand why a lot of people just are not able to do anything much. But those of you who come here to listen for information and reality, you're going to get as good a serving as I can possibly make it. I've been doing this for a while, and we don't play games. Oh, I make a mistake once in a while. Who doesn't? It's called being human. But generally speaking, the amount of information you have here is unprecedented, and the quality of it is, we like to think, the same. Most especially when we're talking about this global genocide that has been unleashed on planet Earth, and that's exactly what it is. It's allegedly approaching 14 billion injections now on the planet in its entirety, and over 600 million in the U.S. And if you've been with us, you know that now we're looking at CJD cases, which used to be one in a million people, as being common. Turbo cancers, common as hell. And what's being done about it? Not much. If people can even learn about it, they're not going to learn about it on the mainstream media side of the street. That's out. And if you go to the alt-news side of the street, you're going to get just as deceived and confused by many of the clowns and shucksters on there. You're not going to learn anything on the alt side except confusion. That's the game. They, same group, own it all. Don't give up. It's not what I'm saying. Know your enemy is what I am saying. All right, let's go to the better half of this team. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, good. Did you have dinner today?
You're watered, dinner? Fed.
Good, okay, good. All right. Don't forget to take a shower once a week, whether you need it or not. And
well, it's we're getting quite a bit of rain here, so I just step outside.
Just step outside, good. So you really are having a rain shower. You told me that. It's a rain shower,
yeah,
or is a storm?
A nor'easter.
Oh,
yeah,
those are fun.
No, yeah, because there's a lot of wind with it, too.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Well,
we don't get those
saturated.
Kind of storms.
We've had
here
so much rain this winter. It's, you know, it's incredible. You
it's
want
okay.
some?
I would. I'd never have too much rain. I like rain. No problem.
Yeah, the places that need it don't get it. And
no, it's
some of
it's
us
true.
Are just,
well, I'm on the east side of a 8,000-9,000 foot almost mountain. So I'm in a rain shadow. We don't get hit. On the other side of the mountain, they get blasted. So, but anyway, we do get enough. About 18, 19 inches of rain a year, I think, something like that. Turbo lung cancer in under 40-year-olds. 12 cases. Dr. William Mackus reporting on that now. He's been spending a lot more time on the vax injured lately, bringing a number of cases forward, which is very important. We do that all the time here. And good to see. Bird flu reported in a U.S. resident. The CDC is warning about the risk of transmission from unpasteurized milk. I think I did mention that last time. It's pretty crazy out there. Another football player, as in soccer, dies suddenly at 24. These things just continue. They don't slow down. More than a million U.S. excess deaths among those over 65, since the injections were approved. That number is way conservative. Sorry, it's way more than that. It's probably coming from ultimately, if I traced it down, a government agency. Wouldn't be surprised. Another former NFL football player died suddenly at his grandmother's home at the age of 35. So there you go. It's just nonstop. It's really crazy. As I mentioned, CJD is really on the roll, and that's not good. Tell us a little bit more about CJD, then we've got a little bit of a reader to do here for you. What's the latest? Are doctors beginning to step up to the plate and actually admit that there is CJD now rampant in the country? Is anybody saying that?
We know there's more cases being diagnosed, that's for sure. You know, and it used to be rare. I mean, the genetic form, I just read a statistic today, was thought to be one in, I think the number was 9 million. That's genetic, familial. Now, the sporadic form, which means it could arise from, for reasons unknown,
right,
presumably something in the environment or something metabolic that causes it to happen, one in a million.
But it's the total number of CJD cases. Do we have an accurate guesstimate at this point?
No. Like
one in a million, that means about 330 cases a year. 300 cases a year in the U.S. That's traditional. One in a million.
I don't know if that's globally or just in the U.S.
Don't know. Don't know either.
Could be U.S. Yeah, that could be.
That would be my guess.
There's a lot more of it. I mean, in many of these people who are coming into these family support groups had never heard of it before. I mean, that tells you how rare it was. You know, we heard about Alzheimer's, we hear about ALS, we hear about Parkinson's, but rarely has anyone heard of Creutzfeldt-Jakob, and people don't even know how to pronounce it.
No,
much less
that's
what
also
it is.
Unfamiliarity, we'll call it, with CJD is reflected in a lot of the readers and anecdotal stories we've been presenting from people who have lost a loved one quickly and mercilessly with CJD. They'd never heard of it before, some of them. They don't know about it. It's becoming a very obvious part of the vax injury landscape now, no question. All right, we got a couple things to do here. This is an interesting little subtopic, fear of vaxxed spouse. Now, a lot of you listening right now are wearing those shoes. Fear of vaxxed spouse. We got to go ahead and start on a couple of these.
Okay. My husband took the jab, and I have been afraid to be intimate with him. And someone replies, "You're right to be afraid. Transfection happens with touching, kissing, and unprotected sex."
I would say protected sex is absolutely no barrier to protein transmission either.
No, because you're face-to-face and breathing each other's exosomes, and then the skin-to-skin contact.
Right, all of that. All of that. Now, do you want to talk about latex? The smallest hole in latex is 50 times bigger than an HIV virion. Just as an example. Now, that's a virus, not a protein. The smallest hole in latex is 50 times bigger than a human immunodeficiency virus. So is that a barrier? Uh-uh. And proteins go right through the skin. Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt, but there was an opening there.
Someone else says, what else can you say about that? What I find much worse is that unvaccinated people are also affected. Just yesterday, I had a customer conversation with a woman, 49, who met a man. After a while, he told her that he had been vaxxed. 2 months later, she had a heart attack and now a stent. And she feels like crap. That's terrible, because she consciously decided against the poison and now has it in her body because of an irresponsible vaccination. And I've had bad things happen several times because of shedding. My children's uncle, heart attack at 55, unvaxxed, but shedding at work every day. There are countless examples of this.
As I've said before, if they could color easily the exhalations that people emit all the time, the amount of air processed is stunning. It's huge. And these little proteins are floating around and easily picked up. You grab a door handle, grab a shopping cart, go right through your skin if it's there. And we know that a vast number of people in this formerly wonderful country are definitely injected and shedding. We're going to spend more time on shedding later. All right, here's one more here. Yes, I am in Los Angeles, where the percentage of people vaxxed is 90+. I deal with the effects from shedding almost constantly. I only feel normal when I'm pretty much a hermit for 2 or 3 days. But when I am around the vaxxed, even if I don't touch them, don't shake hands anymore, etc., it's the breath or touching things that they've touched that does it. Shopping cart handles. I cannot tell you how massive
a problem is that. It's more than that. It's door handles.
Oh, yes.
It's
anything
pens.
That people touch, but especially a communal thing like a shopping cart.
Sure.
It's the same symptoms every time, depending on the intensity of the shedding. Some people are riddled with spike proteins and nanotech to the point where they reek of it. Yes, there's a very particular smell. Symptoms for me, slight headaches, brain fog, sour stomach, nausea, lymph glands almost immediately swell up on my neck. I start coughing, a dry cough, and then I get a temperature of 99.2 to 99.7. It's like clockwork every time. Now, though, as soon as I smell them or start feeling it, I try to quickly get out of that situation where I'm near them. If I stick around and try to ignore these symptoms, I just feel worse and worse. Lately, I feel like my throat starts to close up and constrict. Oh, how fun is that? I'm basically allergic to the vaxxed at this point. I am allergic to the vaxxed at this point. Yes. But to elaborate further on transfection, I have a friend who is an ultrasound specialist. She deals with pregnancies and checks the placentas and fetuses for the various scans throughout a pregnancy. She has seen all kinds of abnormalities, both with the placenta and the fetuses, since the rollout. The rollout of what? The rollout of the death vax, the bioweapon. In fact, there's a specific set of abnormalities that coincide with either they got Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, or AstraZeneca. One day, a woman came in for her 20-week scan, and my friend said, I knew immediately that it was a Moderna placenta by the type of abnormalities present and that the placenta was really messed up for being a mere 20 weeks. So I stated casually to the woman, so you've had your 2 Moderna shots then, right? To confirm my findings were accurate. The woman said, no, actually, I'm unvaxxed as I work out of home, so I didn't see the need to go get the shots. To which her husband said, I've had 2 Moderna shots. It was at that moment she had absolute confirmation that transfection is real. Breath, just passing someone or talking across from each other, can also do it. Sweat, shaking hands, hugging, any skin-to-skin contact, saliva, open-mouth kissing, sperm, anything from mucous membranes, etc. Go ahead and finish.
In essence, the woman and her unborn child were, quote, vaccinated due to her intimate exposure to the twice Moderna-vaxxed husband. It's a very grim reality, but it's real. I hope that soon everyone realizes this thing is a bioweapon and begins an ongoing detox program for life that kills the spikes as they are being made. It's not a great solution, but it's better than the vaxxed doing nothing to mitigate all this. We may feel the effects more acutely, but everyone has been infected by it. I'm on a constant detox regime myself, just to try to stay on top of things.
That's a remarkable story. The tech looked at the ultrasound and could tell, hey, that's a 2 Moderna placenta. But it wasn't the mom. It was the dad.
Yeah, that's
she
incredible.
Got it. That should wake everybody up out there. And I think a lot of people, frankly, with 90+% vaxxed in much of the country, they don't understand any longer that they have been turned into a spike-producing factory. They have been producing spike to the extent that they can literally be logically and correctly called a walking bioweapon. That's what they're doing. Think about
it. Well, that was the intention. I have no doubt that that was the intention.
Nope. Correct. Okay, we'll come back to some of these in a little bit. We've got a very good video with Dr. Pierre Corey, who was on the Greg Hunter program, show, sideshow, carnival, whatever you want to call it. Greg is an interesting guy. We like Greg Hunter, but he isn't as prepared sometimes as he might be. Just be polite. We've mentioned that. It's a lot of work to do this kind of business anyway. All right, you want to set this up?
This is the video with Dr.
Yeah.
Pierre. Okay, yeah, this was quite a good interview. The whole thing's worth watching. And the first 15 minutes or so, he talks about the war on ivermectin and just how, you know, as soon as it was apparent that it worked as well as it did, they set out to discredit it and scare people away from it. But it was completely unfounded, and this recent lawsuit or court case that found in favor of the people that had filed suit to push back on all the disinformation. The court found in their favor that it was unfairly maligned. So that's saying something. And then he spent some time talking about shedding. In fact, a lot of time talking about shedding. And then the most disturbing part, as if shedding isn't disturbing enough, is the part at the end. Well, I won't ruin it.
All right. We'll get to that. Okay, here we go. With Greg Hunter with Dr. Pierre Corey about shedding, which we have been urging you to take seriously for, well, we're into 4 years now. I think we might have been one of the first platforms to make that warning loud and clear. Here we go.
They broke the story on Zero Hedge a while ago, and they said the CDC and the Pfizer documents show that shedding's real, and it is real. I mean, shedding is shedding real?
Well, shedding is not. First of all, shedding is absolutely real. So myself and a partner of mine, someone called goes by anonymously, a Midwestern doctor. They're absolutely brilliant. They're actually kind of a savant. We've become very close colleagues. We compiled a full review and report of all the science around shedding, the background of shedding, the fact that the FDA has guidance around shedding. Like, sure. The FDA has a document from 2015 where they literally say that gene therapy medical products have the capacity to shed the product of the gene therapy, which is the spike protein. And they encourage, or they recommend, that shedding studies be done in animals and humans for every gene therapy product. We found out through a FOIA document that a shedding study was done in animals, but we don't know the results. Pfizer did one. But in that document, we review all the mechanisms of why it can occur, how it occurs, and what the typical symptoms are. And then we collected clinical reports, many of them written by physicians, biologists, different researchers who have found that they're sensitive to shedding. And I don't know the proportion of people that are sensitive to shedding. I think it's small overall, but it kind of depends on what the symptoms are. If you talk about menstrual irregularities, that is the most common shedding symptom.
Wow.
It's women who report that their menstrual cycles were disrupted soon after the vaccination campaign. And if you want to talk about censorship, that was probably the most highly censored topic. I mean, the Facebook groups that developed over this, women who were posting about this, taken down. But there's a whole host of them. And, I have not really had someone come to me solely from getting sick from shedding. We have tons and tons of reports on them. My nonprofit, FLCCC.net, we have like an I Prevent protocol, which is, it's suggestions of things you can take to protect yourself from the spike protein, but
which is what's being shed. What's
yes,
being shed is the spike. Dr. Michael Yeadon, again, I'm quoting a doctor.
Yep.
He said, what they did was crazy. They put like a brick on the accelerator of a go-kart and where it wouldn't stop producing the spike protein.
Yes.
They let it go.
Yes.
And so that's the problem with the shedding is these spike proteins, and these can make you sick and give you blood clots. Can they do that?
Oh, for sure. They cause hypercoagulability. Certainly, blood clots is much more common since the campaign, but now we...
Hypercoagulability is another way of saying sludge blood.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? That's what's shortening people's lives in many cases. The average guesstimate now is that if you've taken a shot, I don't even like saying this, your life is shortened at least 25 years, your normal life expectancy. And I think it's varying on the person. It's far more dramatic than that. But they're admitting these things now incrementally, slowly but surely.
This new phenomenon, this new pathophysiology, which we call microclotting, and that's where you can find these.
That is not a new phenomenon. The spike has been causing microclotting, and we think that the bioweapon virus is doing the same thing because it's producing spike. This is old. I don't know why he said that. But whatever. Maybe he's just getting up to speed on that. Microclotting is a killer, and it occurs everywhere in your body.
I think he's making a distinction between regular clotting and then microclotting, something that's happening at the level of the capillary.
Got it. All right, here we go.
Fibrinoloid proteins circulating in the blood, and they cause blood sludging. So the microcirculatory...
He said sludging, blood sludging. I think that's the first doctor I've heard use the term sludge. I think. Maybe I've heard others. That was encouraging. Have you heard many use the term sludge blood or sludging like that? Not many, I don't think.
Not many. There seems to be some aversion to talking about the blood.
Which is, as we have been saying, the number one target and the number one victim, the first victim in the administration.
Yeah, I would say so. And you know, the blood was talked about very early on in this thing.
Your heart cannot push this crap around. It's thick. It's no joke. Remember Nurse Anne trying to extract blood from a patient, and it's clotted before she can get it to the lab. It's clotted as she's taking it out of the person. So this is a catastrophic bioweapon.
So as the blood tries to go through like the smallest vessels, like the capillaries, you know, it goes through very slowly. There's poor gas exchange because there's these tiny, tiny little clots floating around in the blood, as well as the red cells aggregate. The spike protein causes red cells to aggregate into clumps, even platelets. And so, you know, one of the things that we see a lot of symptoms from poor microcirculatory flow, and that's all related to the spike protein.
Wow.
Let's tie that in again to shedding, and the number one thing you're going to get when you're around the vaxxed is spiked. Okay? Understand that. And there are other things as well. So you don't want... It's really hard to say you don't want to be around the vaxxed. And the vaxxed don't want to be around the unvaxxed. Why? Because the unvaxxed are still normal in terms of their basic ability to withstand disease. And they'll be carrying all kinds of things that you in your vaxxed, compromised immune status don't want. So there are reasons, equal reasons, for vaxxed and unvaxxed to stay away from each other, or at least minimize contact as much as you can. This sounds almost inhuman, but it's the truth. That's what they've done to us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm numbed by this. Short of a nuclear exchange, we had 700 million injections in America alone. What something nearly, as I'm estimating, because they added 14 billion injections globally. This is a big deal. And so, what I wanted to ask you is about is ivermectin still your number one go-to drug? I know you use other things when you doctor, but are you still heavily depending on ivermectin as a treatment for people?
100%. Still the mainstay, still first line, still what I do. I use combination therapies. So I pair ivermectin with hydroxy. I actually use a third antiviral, which is called nitazoxanide, which here retail is extremely expensive. You can get it much, much, much more cheaply from a compounder, but in South America, it was widely used. My colleague, Dr. Flavio Cattagiani, who I think is the top clinical therapeutic expert of COVID in the world. I mean, he did amazing, beautifully done studies, numbers of studies. He's probably written 50 papers in COVID. He found nitazoxanide really effective with ivermectin. And it's interesting because nitazoxanide is also an antiparasite with antiviral properties. And so
we haven't spent much time talking about that. Are we up to speed on that up here in the U.S.? Do people even know about it? It's not heard about.
Yeah, I have seen clinicians prescribing it.
Good.
Sometimes
okay.
when the ivermectin, about 30% of the patients don't respond to ivermectin, so they you know, are put on these other drugs, which, you know, the nitazoxamide is an antiviral.
Good.
You know, so I use those, but I also use, you know, easy stuff like povidone iodine nasal spray or like hypochlorous acid, danolite. Have people spray it in their nose and mouth, reduce the viral burden, reduce the viral load, and you get better a lot quickly. And then some nutraceuticals. But, I still hit it hard.
By the way, apparently, several weeks ago, it was said that 1 out of 13 people had active cases of this bioweapon, COVID virus, being still passed around, whatever variant it was, I don't remember. But it's still there, and you don't want it. So, you know, if for no other reason, when you go out, put a mask on. It will help you. It will help you. I'm not saying it will totally protect you. And I would wear gloves when I go into the store. I do. And if you grab a shopping cart, make damn sure you have gloves on. This is not a time to play games. And you got to take this deadly seriously.
Oh, so ivermectin, I know people that take it. I'm one of them. I take ivermectin 3-4 days a week. I'm around people who are vaxxed. I can tell you that I know a family member that had cancer and took ivermectin and Fenben and had stage 4 cancer and now is clean on a PET scan.
Yeah.
But anyway, would you tell people who are around their family that are vaxxed and they're not vaxxed? Because I hear a lot of this. My family did it. I didn't. I don't want to be away from them. Would you suggest that when you're around family members who are vaxxed and you're hugging and touching and breathing, and would you suggest that people take ivermectin?
No, so I don't have a single recommendation around that, because the thing is, if you're not aware that you're getting symptoms after being exposed to the vaccine, that means you're resistant to it. You're not going to get symptoms. I'm around vaccinated people all the time. I do not get symptoms. I think the vast majority of us don't get symptoms. So if you're not affected by it, I don't know that you need to take anything prophylactic. Now, however, there are patients who are still concerned. They don't want to be exposed to spike. They're worried about the longer-term consequences. And I think that is a reasonable concern. We don't know how this is going to affect our health over the long term. And there are things like, for instance, ivermectin binds spike. Things like natokinase break down spike. And so, you know, bromelain does that. So we do... You know, some people elect to take, spike binding agents like ivermectin, things that break down spike. And so, I think it's more like, you know, one of the things that differentiates doctors is our risk tolerance and our aggressiveness. And, you know, people doctor very differently. And same thing with patients. Patients have very, very risk tolerances. Like, for instance, Greg, I don't take ivermectin prophylactically anymore just because, like, I don't care about COVID. Like, the last time I got COVID, it was gone in 24 hours. I
mean, I'm talking about the shedding, though. I'm talking about
the shedding, I don't take anything for shedding. I mean, I'm on natokinase because I think it's a really good supplement for longevity and for atherosclerotic heart disease. So I'm on a couple of things that, you know, would help against spike, but I don't go more aggressive than that because I it's not affected. But I do have in the back of my head, I do wonder, you know, this spike protein and with these cancers and, you know, the SV40 sequences, like, am I going to be affected by that? Because, you know, before, Greg, you said, you know, what's being shed? We know for sure that the spike protein is being shed. We also know that in some of the body fluids, like breast milk and otherwise, they find mRNA. And that's where I start to worry. Because if I'm getting shed on by mRNA, and then that somehow enters my body, because the problem with what's the shedding is that it's these lipid nanoparticles, We also have a biological counterpart. So the lipid nanoparticle is synthetic. They make that in a factory. But we have something called exosomes, which is how our cells intercommunicate. And what's interesting about nanoparticles and exosomes is that they can cross any physiologic barrier. So we can inhale them, and then they can get absorbed and go into the body. And that's literally the main route that we think shedding is occurring. And so am I inhaling and absorbing mRNA, and is it still intact and active? We don't know enough about that yet. But if it is, I worry about my own risks of getting diseases related to the spike protein or mRNA. It's really scary, Greg.
Which is why people like me say, well, listen, I'd rather take it than not need it. I mean, what's the debt?
All right, Greg. That's fine. Here's the deal. If any of you remember what you just heard Dr. Pierre Corey say, you would have heard on this program probably 3 years ago or very close to it. We've been really watching this carefully. He is too. But the very idea that it's not just the spike that is being spread by shedding, but the mRNA and the LNP and maybe even the pieces of DNA, up to 400 billion of which are in each injection. And we're beginning to see what they were. They were not in there by an accident. There's no contamination issue there. They're there for a reason. So there may be several things being shed and spread, and you need to be aware of that. And if you're talking prophylactic, I would say that a normal regimen of intelligent COVID-related supplements are very wise. We take them every day and try to keep a barrier up rather than wait to get sick and then try to fight that particular inconvenience off. We give ourselves the benefit of good supplementation. And you all know what most of them are. We won't go into it right now. We've gone down this list many times. But that's the kind of prophylactic I think you want to do. And add to that, of course, eat good food, for God's sakes. Don't eat this American toxic poison chemical death food. Don't. You've got to go organic only. Even if it's a little more expensive, eat a little less, you'll be fine. Most of us can stand and lose a little weight. Not going to hurt anything. Just be careful. Common sense is going to carry the day for a lot of people. But with 90% injected in this country or thereabout, we got real problems. That was what this was designed to do, was to spread via group contact and interaction. They had it all figured out in the beginning. They knew.
Yeah, it's doing its thing.
Sorry for taking ivermectin.
Very little.
So what about the people who have gotten shots? We've had more than 200 million Americans get at least three shots, and they all get COVID.
It may be 275 million, easily.
Mm. So we know it didn't help. Dr. Ryan Cole said it. Dr. Peter McCullough has said it. Dr. Elizabeth Eads has said it. I believe Dr. Michael Yeadon, who said in the UK Parliament that the ingredients were intentionally toxic. That was his quote. So it didn't help a single person, did it not? Did it help anybody?
No, it's done the opposite, Greg. You know, it was sold to the world's population on a campaign of fear. Hmm. You know, get vaccinated or you're going to die from COVID. And suddenly you have the entire medical establishment condition everyone's brains to believe that the most important thing for their life is that they don't die of COVID.
Okay, point well taken, point made here long, long ago, and all of you are well familiar with that. Fear. It's all about fear. Fear-based campaigns will market successfully almost anything, even something like this, which is ultimately suicidal for many people. Okay, where's the other spot in this we want to jump to?
I think it's right around 48 or 49 minutes. I mean, it's not very long, but
I think it's
okay. Let's find out.
Greater than 25. Hold on.
Those 48. There's
officials around the world.
Okay, here's 48. Let's see what we got.
Five who are like really happy and doing well, and then I'm like, oh, I'm a really good doctor. So I'm like, my kind of like my psyche and I mean, it's like an EKG. I go up, I go down, and it's hard. But we're getting better at what we do. But I don't know that we'll ever figure it out completely. I know for a fact the effectiveness of my doctoring now compared to 2 years ago in these syndromes is far, far, far better. And yeah, I tell my patients that. I say, just hang in, hold on. I'm figuring this out as we go. I'm getting better at what I do, and you know, we'll find something that helps you. And I try to give them encouragement that way that we're trying.
You said something really important in this interview. This is the first time I've treated an injury from a bioweapon.
Wow. At least that's what I think. If it comes out that some other diseases I've treated were bioweapon induced, I wouldn't be surprised. But yes, I do believe this one is particularly complex. I mean, that spike protein is a pathogen of pathogen. And I want to tell you an anecdote, Greg. So definition of a pathogen is a substance or organism that creates or causes disease, okay? And we have a specialty in medicine called pathologists. So what are pathologists? So pathologists essentially look at human tissue, right? So they look at biopsies, cultures, autopsies, and they examine these tissues, and they look, and they have all sorts of stains. So they'll put tissue on a slide, and they have all kinds of stains to look for different things. So they can stain for cancer cells. They can stain for microorganisms. They can stain for inflammation. And so they're expert at looking at tissue to see what is the disease process that's going on. All right, I hope you're sitting down for this. But I went to a dinner a couple of months ago that was attended by what I call a system pathologist. This is someone who works in a really busy pathology practice, board certified. And we were having a discussion. We're talking a little bit about COVID stuff. And I was like, I think I'd had a drink, and I was kind of a little just blunt. And I just like looked at him, and I said, and I cursed. I said, are you guys, you know, blank staining for the spike protein? And you want to know what this pathologist told me? He said, what's the spike protein?
Boy.
Got it. There's the punchline. Is that a confidence builder out there? You go to your doctor, you're saying, basically, doctor, heal me. And some of these doctors don't even know what the spike protein is.
That's really frightening.
You wonderful listeners out there who pay attention, in many cases, know at least as much, if not more, about this than your doctors will. Or your certified nurse practitioners, or whatever else you get dumped off on. So take notes, keep listening, learning. You've got to be your own advocate whenever you go into a doctor's setting. You have to be. Do not be afraid of doctors. You just heard the reason why. This is a professional board-certified pathologist. What's a spike protein? He actually said that. After almost 4 years into this.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that got your attention. Okay, we have this interview under our names and guests, if you'd like to go listen to it.
You should probably play another minute of it. It's,
okay, very good. We'll do it. Here we go.
What's the spike protein? And I look at him, and then he goes, is that something to do with vaccination? He's like, I don't understand what all these people complain about vaccination. He tells me this, he goes, all I know is that the vaccinated are better in 2 days and the unvaccinated take 2 weeks. He's talking to literally an expert. All things COVID.
Which is a complete total lie, right? Not true.
But no, of course it's not true. I mean, this is all propaganda. I mean, he's just spewing things that he's told that I'm sure all the people in the system are telling themselves because they have to protect their psychology. I mean, they literally participated in a global campaign which has turned into humanitarian catastrophe. And I think most of them can't handle that they protected. So why not just prop up the lie that we did the right thing, we've helped everyone, the vaccines work. So, but let's leave that aside. Because the more important part of this story is that is so emblematic of the lethal consequences of this mass scientific censorship and propaganda. I mean, the amount of papers showing how deadly and toxic these vaccines are that have been retracted, that gone through peer review and then were retracted. I mean, a recent paper by McCullough, it's his second vaccine study that he's had that shows the devastating impacts of the vaccines, retracted. So basically here I'm talking to a system pathologist He's a pathologist, and he's unaware of what I believe is the most toxic and lethal pathogen in history, and he doesn't know what it is. Do you get a sense of what how dystopian that is?
Maybe he is willfully ignorant.
No, there's no excuse after three, four years of this to be willfully ignorant to that degree, no. Corey was right. He's propping up the lie because it's convenient. How sickening. Wow.
That's rather mind-blowing and discouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is.
I mean, you really have to have your head in the sand at this point.
That's a very kind description. I would rephrase it, but correct. That's just awful. Absolutely awful. Okay, let's jump back to our readers here in our remaining 8-9 minutes. Okay, CJD, remember, about 300 cases a year in this country up until 2020, and now it's obviously running loose, if not amok. Okay. And here's the first one. I lost my mom today. On August 2nd, we took my mom, 63, to the ER after she suddenly began experiencing difficulty speaking. Her symptoms looked very similar to a stroke. After many, many tests, including a spinal tap, it was confirmed to be CJD. 98.9% positive results on every test that it was CJD. That's August 2nd. Today, September 11th, 40 days later, my mother died. She was a vibrant, quick-witted, always on the go lady. There was no warning, no inciting incident, nothing. Just one day, she was her, and then she wasn't. I'm still trying to understand what just happened to her, to me, to our family. I am angry and confused, and I'm scared. How did our entire lives just get so flipped upside down in only 40 days?
Someone replies,
yeah.
I have not read a more accurate description of CJD than just one day she was her. And then she wasn't. This disease is cruel. Another person says, I'm also part of the Lost My Mom to This Disease Club. I'm so sorry you are now as well. My mom wasn't that much older, too. Did she have any symptoms prior to August 2nd? That is quite rapid onset, for better or worse. And the original poster answers, the week leading up, she said she was foggy-brained, having difficulty finding her words and feeling tired. I immediately thought a blood sugar is off. Then we saw her struggling to get the words from her brain to her mouth. She looked like a little goldfish. Her mouth would move open and close, but nothing came out. So then I thought meningitis. And then the proverbial shit hit the fan. Someone says, I'm so sorry. I lost my mom in a similar way to CJD in May. Feel free to message me if you want to process what happened or if you want someone to talk to.
And an additional comment. This is quite a thread, this one. It's really hard. I lost my mom less than a month ago. It was also so sudden. I'm so sorry this is happening to you. It feels like the whole world is crashing and burning. I want you to know that people want you to reach out to them, and your anger and sadness is not a burden. I'm so sorry again. Someone adds to that, I'm so sorry you lost your mom. CJD is such an unfair disease. I was driving my mom to physical therapy one morning before they knew what was going on, and I thought it might have been a stroke. And between her driveway and the stop sign at the corner, she stopped knowing who I was. So I understand when you say that one minute she was herself and the next minute she wasn't. Side note, have you touched base with the CJD Foundation at all? They were an amazing resource to my family during my mom's illness. I can't help but plug their services, and it's cjdfoundation.org. And the original poster says, they contacted us to take custody of her body, but that's it.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the defining features of CJD compared to some of the other neurodegenerative diseases is that it does tend to progress very rapidly once the symptoms appear, unlike Alzheimer's, which can linger for sometimes years. Not CJD.
No.
18 months is the average time right. from diagnosis to death, but, you know, lately it's been weeks.
Yeah, it's a turbo version. I think it's different. I don't know how.
It's always been fast.
People are looking for it and testing for it far more often than they ever did, which I guess is expected.
Well, I think just the rapid presentation of the symptoms.
From the driveway to the stop sign, her mom no longer knew who her own child was.
Yeah, it's like someone flipped a switch. Yeah. Whereas, like Alzheimer's tends to come on more gradually and progress more gradually.
Go ahead.
All right, this is a new one. My dad appears to have a rapidly progressing variant of CJD. He was extremely high-functioning, independent and successful, sharp as a tack, quick-witted and extremely busy socially, avid reader and frequent public speaker. His initial symptom was unrelenting insomnia, which started over the summer. In September, he started complaining that his glasses seemed crooked, no matter how much he adjusted them. In October, he woke one morning and couldn't figure out what day it was. A string of odd comments and increasing confusion led to an ER visit. Over the next 3 weeks, he seemed to lose cognitive and motor function by the hour. 3 weeks later, he was completely paralyzed and non-responsive. 24 hours later, he was dead. We donated his brain to the Prion Disease Alliance in hopes that it will help shed light on this cruel, devastating disease.
Was this known, this ruthless brutality, this withering, wicked way of taking people out, was this known
about? Yeah, it's one of the worst ways. What are
was
the worst
this known
ways
about
to go?
Widely before 2020, back in the days when things were normal and we were having 300 cases a year?
I think the only, publicity it really got was when we had the mad cow disease outbreak.
And that's 20-some years ago. Okay, go ahead, take the next one.
Right. Someone says to that, my grandmother's progression was very similar. We had no idea she was even sick until her coordination and cognitive function were pretty much non-existent. It snuck up on us out of nowhere, and it was devastating. The time from symptom onset to the non-responsive state was about 2 weeks, and by the third week, she was gone.
All right. The original poster, I believe, says, unfortunately, my mother experienced the same extremely rapid progression. I have not seen anything about why some people live with the disease for years and others just days or weeks. I'm truly sorry you have become a member of our club here, but know that my heart is with you. And a comment to that. My mom passed away from this 4 weeks ago. She had the same rapid onset for 20 days to coma. She was in a coma for 4 months at home. We got depression and dementia as the initial diagnosis. The drugs for it worsened her ammonia levels. She got diagnosed after a month of tests showing no abnormalities. The one earlier symptom she complained of were severe hair loss and a lot of wrinkles. It's awful that we didn't think the slight personality changes of high anxiety were a problem until she had confusion. She was a homemaker, and we all were heavily dependent on her. She silently pulled through without sharing what was happening to her. It is only once I checked her phone that I found out she was searching for numbness, tingling, and dizziness in the last 6 months. She's looking these things up, apparently. Breaks my heart. I really wonder if poor mental health, inability to manage overwhelm, overthinking, not admitting they need help doing things, inability to get needs met, anxiety, can trigger all this. Go ahead.
All right. Very similar case of rapid onset for my mother earlier this year. Just awful. And let's see. My closest friend, who I've been friends with since childhood, lost her mother to CJD a week ago. After diagnosis, she passed away after 2 weeks and 2 months from the first initial onset of symptoms. I will miss her dearly. She was a wonderful woman. Now, there's mention of, you know, the infection or the injection in these things. But,
no.
You know, these are all rapid onset cases that have happened in the last year.
Can we call them turbo? Is that fair? Or should we not?
As I said, it tends to be a rapidly progressing course anyway.
I heard about CJD. I've always heard about it, you know, in the periphery, but never heard these horror stories like this. This is from the driveway to the stop sign? You no longer can identify your own child?
That sounds turbo. Yeah, it does. You know, and you know, that may be unique to this bioweapon, whether the infection or the injection. We've had people that are not vaxxed, but that did have the virus, you know, prior to the vax, that came down with CJD. You know, is there a correlation? We have reason to suspect that because of these prion domains that are known to be in the spike. So if they get into the brain, or even if they just get in, I mean, you have a prion protein throughout your body on many different cells. And all it takes is for that protein from the spike to come into contact with one of your native proteins to begin this protein misfolding cascade that will eventually result in the death of the neurons and a spongiform encephalopathy that kills you.
Think of it like dominoes falling over. They go. Once these misfolding cascades begin, it just keeps going. This seems to be getting worse fast. It seems to be from the if we had an average of say 350 cases a year, these people all, and how many of them have said they know somebody who knows somebody who lost somebody, and on and on and on. So this thing is really, as Dr. Corey said, and we've been saying for years, this is the deadliest thing ever created and unleashed on humankind. And it is not still being understood by most people. And then you have denial, which is a normal human emotion. People don't want to go there. Understand. I get it. But this is tough. And then when you have professional pathologists saying what that guy said, I can't believe that one. But it has to be denial.
That's incredible. Just imagine how Pierre Corey felt having that conversation. No.
I know. Crazy. All right. Thank you. Excellent. We'll keep it up and be back on Friday. Have a good night. Take care. Talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And we will pause and come right back with more.